Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, welcome to the 296th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Michael Brown and Bright Chase. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we have Riley Jean Epson on the podcast. She is a director, marketer. She used to be a corporate-level executive at Snapchat, and she's
kind of... She used to be a person under 30.
Yeah, she was a Forbes 30 under 30. She's one of 30 people that were under 30 in America.
Yeah.
At a time. If you've seen Children of Men, you'll understand that in that context, it makes
sense. Kind of a Hunger Games sort of situation.
Yeah. No, but she's a talented director, but also just has like a really interesting way into the business. Even though she went to film school, she kind of started on the corporate side of things and saw a lot of projects from both the client side and the creative side and the directing side, the production side. So she has kind of an interesting viewpoint, and she kind of grew up in the business, and so she had some interesting relationships and is a really good example of like keeping in touch with people. You know, I think she had friends from high school that were helpful in her career, and it is something I think about a lot. Like, you know, when I first moved to LA, I did an internship at Sundance, I did an internship at Village Roadshow Pictures, and I've seen a lot of the people I interned with move on to great success in their careers, and I'm like, I wish I would have stayed in touch with some of these people, but it would be weird after 20 years to be like, I don't know, maybe not 20 years.
I think it's okay to be like, hey, you're doing great. You know, I hope you're well. I think that's okay. I think if you're like, hey, let me pick your brain, and you don't have something really, unless you guys really were good friends who just kind of like lost touch, which happens all the time. Yeah, you know, but to your point, I think, Oren, the big takeaway for me with Riley was just like the social aspect of directing is such a big part. And I think it's a thing that you and I tend to not focus on this show. We're really nuts and bolts. We're really craft. We're still business, right? But we're ignoring the part of the business that is relationships. And Riley is a testament to maintaining those relationships and reaching out to people, interfacing with them in different ways than I think you and I tend to, you know, like we had a long talk about how she uses Instagram to network with people. And networking, you know, I think is a dirty word to many people, but I think that nurturing relationships through many different ways is valuable. And plenty of my good friends I met at networking events years ago, you know? So yeah, I think that to me really stood out in this interview as something that was interesting of just like, oh, here's how you can use Instagram to broaden your network and communicate with people who you were maybe a little, you'd be nervous to walk up to at a cocktail party or something. When we go back to cocktail parties, which will be 18 years from now for me.
Dude, maybe for you, but I went to Whole Foods yesterday, and did you know that their salad bar is open again?
Whoa.
I know.
The one in Burbank?
I went to the poor person Whole Foods. It's a Whole Foods 365. And so
I think they've rebranded it. I don't think it's a 365 anymore.
Have you
noticed? Yeah. I think the 365. Welcome to Whole Foods Talk here.
Yeah. Welcome to Eastside LA. No, but you know, one of my favorite restaurants of all time is Soup Plantation.
I did not know that.
The deal you can get to feed a family at Soup Plantation and get your kids to eat vegetables at the same time is quite amazing.
Yeah. Wait, what? Well, we'll talk about Soup Plantation.
Well, they went out of business. Because
are they all gone?
They're 100% done, right? Because they thought that buffets were over because of COVID. And now the Whole Foods salad bar is open again, so they were wrong. And we're all very sad about Soup Plantation. Anyhow.
Yeah. R.I.P. Soup Plantation.
And almost as important as that, this is the first intro we are recording since you have expanded your family.
That
I
is
heard
true.
You guys adopted a puppy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have a baby also, and they seem to be getting along okay. But we'll pick the puppy over the baby if push comes to shove. No, just kidding. Only a baby. you're catching me on a good day. I think the conversation with Riley was a little harder last
the
night.
Day,
was really,
you mean the you're like that day I, was like a lot of baby stuff going on.
It's less that it's a lot of baby stuff. It's just like the rhythms of a newborn's sleep, and really mostly the mental expectations. You know, like we would do the thing where we would be like, okay, I think she's ready to go to bed. Put her down, get into bed, planning to get an hour and a half, 2 hours of sleep, which is kind of the maximum amount you can get in one stint before you kind of have to get up and feed her again and change her and all that stuff. And then it would be 5 minutes. And so it's not really about the quantity of sleep that I'm getting, which is small, but as filmmakers, we're used to that. You know, that happens sometimes. Also, she is a night owl, and my wife and I are morning people. So, like, we've been getting up and starting our days closer to, like, 9 or 10, and it has genuinely thrown us off because normally I'm up at 6. And so, like, I'm losing a significant amount of my day by needing to
by
sleep
having
that
a
much
child.
Longer. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
how
yeah.
it works. Yeah. Yeah. But, like, yeah, I guess I
hours,
didn't realize that
hours.
I wasn't going to start my day at the time that I normally started at, you know,
right.
what I mean? Which is naive and dumb, obviously. But
what I'm obviously very curious about is, you know, the listeners, regular listeners of the podcast will know that Matt's the mother of his baby, Chrissy, was on the podcast a few episodes ago, and we talked about her morning pages for over 1,000 days. She's been writing every morning. Is she still on the streak?
Well, so they implemented an option to take a break. So, during labor, literally the days that she was laboring, we took a break, but she's
I guess that's permissible.
yeah. When not giving birth to a baby, she has kept the streak up. Yes.
Oh my goodness. Well, congrats. I cannot wait to see how it goes. There's this weird thing about people with kids, which is they only want to
hang out with people with kids.
Yeah. It's not that they only want to hang out with people with kids. It's that they love commiserating with other people with kids. I mean, it's like having dogs. It's like anything, you know, people working in the industry. It's just such a vast topic of conversation that once like one of your friends opens that up in their life, it's like, it's fun to talk about because everyone has experiences with it.
Sure. Yeah. Well, so far so good. She's a cool baby.
Yeah. Nice.
Stoked on it.
Well, awesome. Well, before we talk to Riley, I just want to remind people that we have a Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod. It is a place where you can support us. Give us $1, give us $2, $10, gets you a Just Shoot It hat. I'm going to mail out a couple of those coming up soon because we just got two new patrons at the Just Shoot It hat level.
Quick reminder to everyone, Warren, you maybe have even forgotten this. I want to raise the price of the hats in the new year. So if you want to get in at the $10 level for the hats,
this
do it in
time.
2021. Now is the time.
Yeah. You know what we should get is coffee tumblers because
I keep losing mine.
And
yeah. You mean like a Yeti branded one or something like that? Or?
Yeah. Not a Yeti. You know, something that's probably
like
that
a knockoff.
Same,
$15 same
price point type of thing.
Yeah, that's cool. I've wanted to do RoboCups. That's like the thing.
Is that the thing that holds a cup?
That's the clamp that you put onto a C-stand or a dolly or whatever, and you can put your coffee in it. And, all of my crews tease me because I bring my own.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Interesting thing we can think about. Well, anyway, patreon.com/justshootitpod. Check it out. Honestly, anything you put there, it goes to making this show better, keeping it alive, getting it edited, getting all our services, hosting fees paid. And we appreciate it. It's really fun. And that's like probably the best way that you can let us know that you appreciate the show. If you can't afford to go to the Patreon, email us, justshootitpod@gmail.com, and tell us that you want to be a member, but you can't right now. So you're just saying hi and that you appreciate the show. We like that too.
Also, just $1 is cool in my book. It doesn't have to be $10 a month, you know?
Yeah. We love all patrons and dislike all non-patrons. at least that's what a tattoo I have says.
Yeah.
Enough with that.
On your belly, it's kind of extreme. It's like a Tupac, but
yeah, above and below the navel.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, on that note, let's get on with the show.
Hey,
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We are here with Riley Jean Epson. How's it going? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This is fun. It's my first podcast.
No, come on. Are you serious?
I swear.
So the way it works is it's like a radio show, but it's with your phone.
You were on Forbes 30 Under 30 and you weren't on like 100 podcasts right after? Isn't that how that works?
You know, it was during a pandemic. It was Forbes 30 Under 30, year of 2020. We didn't even get to party together. I just worked with someone named Asia Wilson, who plays for a forward for the Aces in Las Vegas. She plays basketball. And she was Forbes 30 Under 32 as well. And she said, wait, we missed out. We had the worst year. We missed out on all the parties and all the connections. Like, that's the whole point of getting it. And we just didn't get any of it. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, so you know, you're obviously a director. You're doing a ton of spots. You're doing all sorts of cool things. But you have kind of an interesting background. I know you have a lot of history in the business, but you personally were working kind of on the corporate side. You worked for Snapchat doing marketing, but from, I guess, what like Matt and I maybe would normally consider like the agency side or like the creative side. Can you tell us a little bit about how you got there and what you did there?
Yeah, I was super lucky to have gone to high school with Evan Spiegel, the co-founder and CEO. And at the time, you know, was just a startup. It was, we have this idea. There's a handful of us, you know, we're still figuring out what this sort of is. And we know that it's a messaging app, but at
Is the idea that you send nude photos and they disappear after a few seconds?
No.
I think they stumbled into that, but yes. Yeah. Yeah. Just like.
With pictures. Yeah.
Sure. And also pictures that you know that your parents aren't going to see because they expire in a certain amount of time.
The best way to describe it is talking with pictures. And what Snap means by that is, you know, communication is ephemeral. Like, we, of course, this podcast is an ephemeral, but communication itself is ephemeral. And I think the way that people communicate should feel sort of free to go back and forth. So it's a little like jazz where it's like snap, snap. A text, snap, 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 and it poofs, it disappears. And that's kind of how a normal conversation would go. So there's sort of this freedom in being able to talk to each other very quickly and express yourself and communicate really quickly. And so it did kind of, the product lent, I think it's the closest thing to being together, but apart. It still feels like a product that is just really, really well built for communicating in the most genuine way, because there's so many ways to express yourself and to talk to your bestest friend and your closest friend. So it's really it's like talking with pictures. Yeah,
that's I never really thought about it.
Camera company.
Yeah, but it is like walkie talkies with video, right? And like just from a hard drive space or, you know, disk space point of view, like you can't just have a bazillion videos on your phone that, you know, that 50 different people have sent you.
Yeah, and you get to be
so it makes sense they
who,
get deleted.
Who you want to be every day. I mean, that changes. Like, what, you know, I don't want to send a coffee that I got to my friend and have it be on my Instagram grid for, you know, forevermore. I want to just send that and have that poof because I want it to not be as meaningful. So I think it kind of, by removing the time limit of how long things last, I think that actually allows people just to be live in the moment and just to express themselves.
Yeah. And instead of writing feeling emo might delete later, you can just say feeling emo.
Yeah. And then the next day I'm feeling great. And the next day I feel good, which is how human emotions are. They come and go. So yeah. So I went to high school with Evan, and funny, he saw a short film that I created when I was at NYU. And I am a year younger than Evan. So I actually did the first commercial when I was still at NYU. And a lot of folks left school or were able to graduate because they were a bit older and started Snap right away. Whereas I was employee number, I think 31 is my certificate. So I worked with them for a few
years. I like the idea that you got a certificate. That's very charming.
I know.
I mean, 31's pretty good. My old boss was number 14 from Yahoo. I mean, they all like kept track of like their number, obviously.
Sure, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you know, there were still like 7 people when I started freelancing, but I was there. I was still in school, so I would come into town every few months and do a product launch video, and then go back to NYU and try to finish as soon as possible. I graduated a semester early so I could get my butt to Snap as fast as I could, as humanly possible, because it just started growing so quickly. Within one summer, it was like, you know, already 20, mm-hmm. 25, 30 people.
I think it's so exciting that, you know, you were recognized early on, you wanted to get there. But so this is, Snap is your first job, right? What did you do? What was your day-to-day? How did your creative background inform the job at Snap?
I went to Tisch, to NYU, to film school, and I studied filmmaking there. And it was really interesting because I basically was just making films inside of a company. So I was kind of applying all the skills of making a TV or movie. I thought I was going to do Sofia Coppola career. Like, I thought I would make indie films and do my version of Virgin Suicides and, you know, do fun, you know, indie stuff and like quirky comedies. And I love Bill Murray and I love, you know, just all the comedies of my childhood. But it was interesting to go to a startup and just start telling stories for them and for their products, because I didn't realize that that is marketing. So when I went there, I kind of saw myself as, oh, I'm just like the in-house storyteller. We actually struggled with my title for a long time because we didn't know that what I did was basically marketing. So I was on the design team for a while. I like reported directly to Evan for a long time. It was just interesting that, you know, at a startup, you just want to get your products out in the world and you want to tell the story of that product, which is, you know, advertising and marketing. And so I kind of got this master class in, how do you launch a product? How do all the teams work together, from PR to marketing to design to engineering to legal to, you know, everybody comes together and rallies around this big launch, and then you actually hit a button. And I remember being in all these rooms, and at first they were really small conference rooms, and all of a sudden they were huge warehouses full of employees. But, you know, we actually launched the products together, and the video went out and all the marketing pieces went out and all the photos and everything that my team had created. And so every single launch was just such a monumental thing for us. We were like living and breathing and bleeding yellow. It was awesome.
And how did you know, like, I mean, you just came from film school where you were like focusing on art and indie films. How did you know how to make a commercial? Did you make any bad ones before you made good ones, or how did that work? From a creative standpoint, because commercials are different than indie film. You know, you have to hold attention in a much different way.
Yeah. I mean, you're telling stories in 60 seconds versus 60 minutes. So I don't know. I think in a way there has to be a beginning, middle, and end. You have to kind of, you know, we like to surprise and delight. So I remember us always wanting to do things that were kind of unexpected, especially with one product launch comes to mind called Snap Cash, where Snap created like a Square, Venmo type product and partnered with Square, so you could actually send money through the app very quickly. And so we decided it was such a serious product, and adding a financial aspect could be seen as just sort of making Snap feel a little heavier than like a communication between friends and having, you know, people's finances connected. It's just, there's privacy. There's a lot of issues, you know, things that could come up. And so I think to launch it, it was really exciting to create a very wacky, zany, I went for Busby Berkeley. We did a dance musical. Like, what happens when you send money? A dance party happens inside your phone every single time. And, you know, everybody dances and they hold credit cards and they spin coins and, you know, We're in the Money was a big reference for me in 1930 something film. And, you know, it was super fun to create a piece that was unexpected and crazy. And I think the Fast Company called it an acid trip, a Willy Wonka acid trip, Monopoly guy or something. And I remember that quote because I was like, they get me. They think I'm insane.
That's awesome. And were you, how did you just have as unlimited money? Like how, what were the budgets? Like, how does that work? How do you just make, like, as you're, you know, some
or,
of your,
or even how does the pitch and approval process work?
Well, first,
right.
Yeah.
Like if you're making it up as you go, like how does that structure work?
Well, to answer the money question, we were scrappy. I mean, that's the good thing about coming right out of film school is that we knew how to make things really, really cool and well, but not with not a lot of, you know, money and resources. And we had friends and we had everyone who worked on it was kind of coming up and young with us. And so, yeah, I think we just kind of were able to, you know, we weren't obviously non-union at the time. I'm now in the Directors Guild, but back then, you know, we were just, you know, doing these kind of smaller shoots and definitely saw it as a startup still. I mean, Snap wasn't, I think you forget about when you see a $1 billion company, you forget about the come up, you know, like it was definitely not a lot of people knew about it at one point. And so it was kind of fun to be able to stay under the radar and just try things.
Yeah. It's an interesting sector because I mean, obviously as a human, I watch a lot of like launch videos, you know, a lot of the Apple ones and all those things. But it's interesting to think, I do sometimes wonder, I watch an Apple keynote. I'm like, who comes up with like these shots, you know, and these like, it's a pretty amazing production, you know, some of these product launch videos and it's,
yeah. And the space is, everybody wants to know what everyone else is doing. But I think it's interesting too, to kind of just have a lot, there's a lot of respect. I have a lot of respect for just seeing what tech products are coming out of Google and Apple and, you know, the VR side on the AR side. There's just so many exciting things happening right now with technology. And every time there's a cool product launch video, now I, having my background, I definitely appreciate and respect those teams a lot more.
But so you were directing all the spots too? Or did you just bring other directors in?
Yeah. So to answer Matt's question about approval and stuff, it was really just Evan and I. We just had this great partnership and creative, you know, relationship where we were able to ideate and there's so much combustion and compromise and creativity. And I think that's why startups are so fun, is because they are building a brand and they don't know, what is this and who's our talent and what clothes are they wearing and what world is this? And so to kind of build worlds and just make all those tiny decisions, that's what makes a brand. And so it's just really fun to work together as friends and as colleagues and brainstorming all those things.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I guess if you're like Evan or someone and you have this company and it's growing super giant, is there never a point where you're like, hey, let's bring Spike Jonze to direct one of these commercials, you know, like you did for Apple? Like how does person who this is her first job ever, she literally started working while she was still in college. Is there ever that conversation? And also you're not just in charge of directing these things. You're also in charge of these successful launches. And I guess I'm curious about how, if there was a separation between the directing the commercials, like being on set and calling action and cut and being in the edit versus running like the video marketing department of this company that's like growing in an insanely fast speed, that it's the same person that's doing those two things.
Yeah, it definitely was. I was wearing multiple hats and I love to wear a lot of hats. I still do to this day, being a live action director and also being a creative director and a startup advisor. So I think, you know, it's all a part of the same mission though, you know, and I think it actually was really helpful to be the hands-on director. I really love working with actors. I really love working with VFX supervisors on set. Like it's something that I super enjoy, is just that energy on set and being so collaborative. And so I think it was just really nice to be there. And then also to be back at the office, you know, a part of the edit. I was able to be a part of every step, as you said. So the ideation, the creation, the post-production, the launch. And now it's kind of fun. I get to pick and choose the projects, what part I get to be in. So if it's just production, that's great. That's fine. I'll do that. But if it's ideation, perfect. Also great. if it's everything, amazing. But I can kind of separate it now and pick and choose like which phase I get to be a part of, which is, it's a lot less pressure sometimes when you're just doing one. I only have to make the thing. I only have to execute this and cast it and bring it to life and bring my spin to it and put my ideas into it. Great. Okay. Amazing. I don't have to worry about how well it does.
I'm curious about where the buck stopped in terms of your responsibilities, actually, right? Like, were you doing the media spend? Were you, you know, like, certainly there is a limit, and it sounds like maybe that limit was at the creative end. Like, once you delivered, was there someone who took it over, and how did you interface with that person? Or, like, I imagine you weren't, like, doing the media spend, for instance, right? So there is a cap, but this is fascinating because it sounds like you're taking on so much more than a traditional director would, right? So, like, maybe there's something to learn about, and you were educated with just the chance to kind of interface with other departments in a more fluid way than, you know, further on in your career. I think people get a little more siloed as it goes, basically.
Yeah. You know, the delivery was super important to know where it was where all the pieces were going to show up, especially because nowadays, every single project since mobile has exploded and it's our number one device and it's the thing we carry to the kitchen, to the bathroom, in our cars, like it's the TV in our pocket that we take everywhere with us. So every campaign that is shot has to be 16x9, 9x16, 1x1, square, vertical, circular sometimes, you know,
I love
so
those
many
round
more
shows.
Formats.
Can't stick a round show into a square format.
Lauren, you so don't have many. A round phone, bro? That's the shit right there.
I don't, but I've made round videos.
I've shot every format except for
I mean,
round.
You make a square video and you put a
sure,
round border.
Yeah, you crop it. Yeah, yeah.
So you need to get yourself a pair of spectacles because those shoot round. Those are round
yes.
format. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess the 360 degree cameras are
which,
also.
Legitimately, yeah. I guess they weren't embraced by the culture per se, but I thought they were kind of the coolest.
There's so many ad products now. There's so many ways to engage with consumers. And so every product launch has to have a bunch of different versions and you have to pull all the levers. So when you ask about paid media, it's interesting because I definitely care about it and have to understand it even to do my job when it's not my job. But in order to do my job, I have to care and ask all those questions because I think I make better products when I understand where is this showing up? How is it showing up? And so, no, I wasn't in charge of that exact dollars and which platform and ROI and, you know, pivoting the message quickly if this messaging the CTA isn't working, then we pivot to a different CTA. But I was the one that was creating the content, so I would have to know those notes and understand that data and truly process it and then actually, you know, pivot and pivot quickly. So, you know, fail fast. That's as Steve Jobs always said, you know.
And so, are you still at Snap now? I guess I
no. No, I left in 20.
No, we're just at the top of the bio. Or...
Yeah.
No. Well, the way you're talking about it is like the things that now you get to choose to be in or not. But so, because are you, I mean, I know you're on the Tool roster for commercials.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with
like,
Tool.
What's your, where are you now? You're a freelance director, I'm assuming.
Yep. Right? I'm a freelance director and creative director, and I do mostly commercials, but I'm working on getting into TV. I just got into the Directors Guild TV craft program and episodic TV program. So you get to work with mentors. And then at the end, hopefully that leads you to your first episode. It's kind of the idea there. It's a diversity program. A lot of studios are starting them, ABC, Hulu and such, to try to get more women and people of color behind the camera, especially in TV and film and things like that. So I think it'll be exciting to tell stories in a longer format, but I also am a person who, I'm a director who loves telling stories via commercials. I think it's really fun. They're super fast. They're super collaborative. They, you know, the boards come in, you pitch on them, you get the job or you don't, and you're done with it in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Like, it's just so fast. and I'm used to working really quickly, I think, for my Snap days. So I really love advertising and I love being a commercial director. And it's something I really never, I always want to make time for. I never want to move away completely from commercials.
Yeah. Is that, how did you get into the DGA? Was it through commercials?
Yeah. Disney World commercial. I was so lucky. March 2019, I got in. So that was what? How many years ago is that? 3 years ago?
Yeah. Was that, were you a tool back then?
No, I was at a different production company. I tried a few. I think it's important to kind of, it's kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You have to, it's too hot, too cold. This mattress is too hard. This mattress, you know, you have to kind of try a few different.
Without places. Naming names, I'm curious about maybe some of the aspects of.
Or feel free to name names.
Sure, feel free if you want to. Yeah, yeah. It's not, but basically, like, talk to us about what you liked or didn't like about those previous relationships and why Tool makes more sense for you.
Yeah. Or maybe, I guess just to slow it down a hair, yeah. Like, what was the first production company that signed you after Snapchat? And how did you, like, did you say, like, look, I've done all this, all these spots for Snapchat. I want to be repped at a production company. Like, how did that transition happen?
Yeah. So we worked with a production company on one of our Snap commercial, and it was kind of fun. Like we did start to hire directors, which was really awesome. And one of them was via a production company called Big Block. And I met the amazing EP there.
Wait, which EP were you thinking of?
Jeanette.
Oh, I know Jacqueline. Mary over at Big Block back in the day. Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, amazing. And just what a great team. And I just really, really, really love, I just felt like such a kindred spirit with Jeanette. And I just was just like, yeah, let's do this. And so I signed with them right away.
So you obviously directed a bunch of spots. Then you were more on the Snap, on the creative team for a spot, and you brought in a different director and Big Block. And while you're on set, you tell the EP, by the way, I'm also a director. And you show her your website or something?
I it wasn't that sort of cut and dry. It wasn't like, hey, I'm a director. I'm trying to corner you and get you to, it was so much more organic than that. I think she was fully like, well, what are you doing? And what's that? You've been the in-house director. Oh my gosh. Like, you've done all these videos. That's great. I think we were just chatting over coffee in the corner and it just sort of kept unfolding. And she was like, man, we really need more women, especially in the VFX commercial space. Like, we just really need more female directors. Like, oh my gosh, it would just be so incredible to have somebody. We'd be so lucky to have somebody like you. And then it just sort of was like, well, wait a minute. That's what directors do. So they get repped by production companies and they, cause you know, I didn't understand that world. I'm still been learning it since I left Snap because, you know, it wasn't a traditional agency production company model at all. It was very internal. So I think it's been really interesting to learn the ecosystem of the advertising business and the madmen of it all, like the creative directors and how smart they are and how they care so much about their darlings and their babies. And then you're shepherding them and babysitting them and, you know, bringing them to life, and you have to care for them and you have to, you know, be respectful. And it's such a collaborative experience. It's truly the most collaborative.
Right. Yeah. That's crazy. So you're talking to this EP at Big Block and she's like, we'd love to have someone like you on the roster. And you're like, yeah, I'd love to direct stuff for other people other than Snap. And so they put you on the roster.
Yeah. And I directed right out of the gate, a spot for Disney World, and got to fly to Florida, got to go to Orlando. And Disney has a special place in my heart because my grandfather, Buddy Ebsen, he's a Disney legend and did a lot of projects with Walt. And so I feel like that was kind of just a full circle moment for me. I just have always grown up loving Disneyland and having so much respect for their brand. And so to be a part of telling a story for them was really exciting. And to have them be the first one post-Snap, I think, was really serendipitous.
That's awesome. So then did you say, like, that's it? This is my new life. I'm leaving
Snap.
I'm going to be a commercial director?
Yeah. Here, fly away. Peter Pan, flying through the sky. If you, you know, you can fly. It was so fun. It's been just go since then, really, you know, Zillow and State Farm and Kellogg's Frosted Flakes and, you know, Google. It's been super awesome to just work with so many of the brands that I respect and admire so much and continue to kind of, I'm in shock that I've been able to work with so many in the last couple of years during a pandemic, no less.
And so to jump back to Matt's question, so now you're at Tool, you know, you started at Big Block, you've gone through a few different production companies. Can you tell us why switch over? What's the thinking behind that?
I think every place was super important to experience. And I'm so grateful that I got to work with amazing teams and got to learn how all of them work and what they're about. And especially working internally at a company, you know, I wasn't exposed to the advertising ecosystem. I didn't understand, of course, why would I? We didn't have sales reps at Snap. Like, we didn't use an agency. We didn't have, you know, all of the sort of the normal things that come with the bells and whistles that come with sort of the advertising structure. So it's been super amazing to learn through all the production companies that I've been at, you know, what the mechanics are. And I just really enjoyed the journey that I've had and everyone that I've worked with.
What are the things that that you look for in a production company as a commercial director? Like, or how do you figure out if you fit well and if they fit you?
So I would say it's important to know your personal brand. So I think working internally at a company, you're part of a huge, amazing family and you're telling stories for that brand and you're working with all of your colleagues and you don't necessarily have to have like a personal brand at a company because you're just one of many. You're kind of an amoeba and it just doesn't work without all of you. It's not strong without one person. And so I think leaving made me realize, oh my gosh, like what stories do I want to tell for me just under Riley and what do I want to do? And I really lean strongly into comedy. And so I think one thing that I looked for is, you know, what type of directors do they have in their roster? What type of boards do they get? Who are their sales reps? You know, how old are they? What is their infrastructure like? So how many people work there? How many EPs do they have? How many freelance people versus full-time people that are actually employees? You know, what are the other directors? How are they feeling? You know, how long have they been there? How long have the people who work there been there? I think longevity, just, you know, all these questions, the same questions you would kind of ask when you're interviewing to work somewhere. It's the same way I feel about being a director on a roster. I feel because I worked at a company, I feel like I am close. I like collaborating. I like working with a company. So I'm sure some directors just kind of, okay, I met my reps once and I kind of talk to them every few months when we have a job, but I don't really interact with them that much in between. Whereas I love to get drinks and have dinner and talk about the industry and talk about work and, you know, what things are being made and who's moving somewhere and what agencies inspire me. You know, what I'm like a creative director stalker. Like, I love what High Dive is doing in Chicago. I'm obsessed with their, you know, Super Bowl commercial last year with Bill Murray and Jeep. And I love work and I love to talk about the work and the people who made the work that is kind of breaking through the noise and having such cultural moments. And I think that's what makes me a better director.
Let's dive in on that a little bit because I really like that detail. Because I think a common theme in the show, especially recently, has been, you know, you talk to a lot of directors who are young and up and coming and are just like, well, I want to do commercials to pay the bills while I'm making my indie feature or whatever. And it's easy to underestimate that it's its own culture, its own ecosystem, its own, you know, its own world, right? And so that
I like to say that it helps. You kind of have to like commercials to work in commercials.
Yeah, yeah, and show an interest in them. So you're the first person I've heard. We know plenty of commercial nerds, but you're the first person who's called, I've self-described a CD stalker, right? So I'm curious about the logistics of that. Are you just like skimming Ad Age every day? Like, are you looking people up? Are you hitting them up on Twitter? What does that look like to you specifically?
I have a few different methods, I would say. I definitely have some collections on Vimeo and YouTube, but then also I would say a lot of it is Instagram saving ads. I have like a folder. I have a cinematographer folder as well, and have been getting copies.
How do you save ads on Instagram?
Oh, they wouldn't be served to me as ads. They would be served to me because someone posted because they worked on it. So whether that's a production designer posted the ad, or a cinematographer, or a director, or a production company, or a sales rep, someone, I follow a lot of those accounts. So I watch a lot of advertising. And so I would then flag it and say, like, I love the new ads that just came out that are for Home Goods with Jillian, that comedian, I forget her last name.
Bell, maybe?
She lives in them. Maybe it's Jillian Bell.
Maybe yeah, Jillian Bell, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know the spots,
lives in the Home Jacobs. Goods spots. So someone posted that spot with her where she lives in Home Goods, and it was really funny. And so I put it in my folder. And I
wait,
just,
sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to be such an old person here, but wait, on Instagram, I can save a post?
That's with the little ribbon, bottom right ribbon.
Oh, is that like a bookmark?
I didn't know that you could do it in folders.
Yeah, it's a bookmark. And then you can create folders and
what's
track.
Cool about the folders?
Yeah. Wait, I did not even realize this.
Get out your Instagram by Meta. Open that baby up.
Okay, save to collection. Save to. Oh, hey, look. Looks like I've done this before because I already have a collection for another
project.
There you
go. But dear listeners at home, if you wanted maybe a shortcut into following some of the coolest creative directors and the like, you could just follow Riley and see who she's following and then follow the people that click with you as well.
Oh, yes. Let's steal your follower list.
A little shortcut.
Totally. Go for it. Oh, my gosh. Instagram is such a powerful tool for me. I mean, I was just DMing with a comedian that I saw last night at Largo, and I tagged her in the, I reposted Largo's post and said, loved the show tonight. Crazy to be in person pre, during, or are we still in war times? I guess it's not post-war times. We are still in the war time, but we are together in one room, and I haven't done that in 2 years. So I just messaged her and was like, I'm such a huge fan. That was awesome. And she wrote me back, and I was like, that's amazing. We made a connection. Now we're going to get a cup of coffee or a glass of wine and have coffee talk and, you know, talk about our passions and our projects. And, you know, so Instagram has been a really great way for me to connect with comedians, writers, especially cinematographers. Oh my gosh. Some of my, like, I mean, I fangirl out with some, you know, cinematographers, and I've been able to message with them and just say, oh my gosh, I'm such a big fan of the show and I love what you did. And I think, oh my gosh, one person I messaged was the mayor of Easttown creator, and he messaged me back, and I was like, the episode tonight, my mom and I screamed at the TV, and my dad ran in and was like, what happened? He thought we hurt ourselves.
That's great. Well, but you know, I think there is something interesting here, kind of regardless of where you live or what sort of marketplace you're a part of or what sort of circles you run in. I think the evidence is that just, you know, people that you want to connect with are closer than ever, right? And so go out on a limb, tell somebody you like them. That could be, you know, a person in your film club or a person in your film class or, you know, Bradford Young, who knows? Whoever you like could be just a click away, away, I should say.
I had I had coffee with a DP that I'd just been following forever on Instagram. So yeah,
I love that.
I should
do
that more often though.
I'm planning to meet up with this DP who shot I Care a Lot, that amazing Rosamund Pike movie. I loved his work. He was great. So we connected on Instagram, and then, oh my gosh, Miranda July. That was an amazing one. Oh my gosh. Wow. I'm such a fan of all her movies and all her crazy stuff. And
you just wrote her on Instagram and said, let's grab coffee.
No, I just said I love you, and I sent her I think we talked for a second, and then I sent her my college experimental film that is just this crazy 16mm. I cut it myself. I shot it myself. I have the razor blade scars to prove it on a C-Mac. And I sent it to her, and she watched it and like just hearted it, and it was just really cool. Yeah, that was a cool moment.
That's very cool. I'm curious, Riley. You've mentioned a few times that you're both a creative director and a freelance director, and those are two pretty distinct different jobs. And obviously it makes sense. Your background coming up in Snap, you're qualified to do both. But I'm curious about how you navigate just booking creative director jobs relative to booking just director jobs. Like we talk about pitching, we talk about pitch decks, we talk about the commercial directing experience so much, but it's very rare that we talk about the nature of being a creative director. Are you doing that freelance, or are there places that you work with regularly? How does that work exactly?
I think it's really just come about because of my passion for work storytelling and working with startups. I think they can just tell that I care about the whole story, all the touch points, the website, the earned media, the paid media, I love everything. I love anytime a consumer interacts with the brand, I really like to tell stories for all of those touch points, not just the live action directing aspect. So I think that it's been a natural progression of meeting people, talking about how I'm passionate about shepherding a brand, building a brand, creating a brand, just as I did at Snap. And then I think it just sort of makes sense that I'm able to. Creative directing really is copywriting. It's like a combination of making great decks and writing a lot. So writing a lot of, whether those are scripts or taglines or call to actions, which we say CTAs, a lot of what I do is actually writing, I would say, creative directing. And visual, obviously, is the visual aspect of pulling images and creating decks and things like that. But a lot of it is just, what's our story? How do we show up in the world? And how do we reinforce what our brand is through the work that we create together and the products we launch?
I know we talk about this a ton, Matt, so I apologize, but any tips on, or what's your strategy for pulling images? Where do you go? Like, where's your first stop?
Oh my God.
He wasn't joking. We talk about this a lot.
I could talk about it for days and days. Pinterest here and there, but mostly I would say a combination of just Googling different things. I mean, my Google search must be totally insane because I'm like very specifically a woman, this type of woman sitting in a coffee shop near the window, drinking a tall glass of water. Like, it's so specific what I look for. But I do rely on IMDb a lot because a lot of my references, IMDb has a ton of images from films. And so that's really helpful because I pull a lot of references. I was just looking up It's Complicated today, actually, because I'm doing a pitch for a brand that I won't mention. But
It's
a complicated brand. No, but there's a lot of powerful women in the spot, and they're older. They're like 60 plus. And so I love the way that they shot Meryl Streep and her girlfriends at like the dinner table scene. And so I actually went on IMDb to It's Complicated and like pulled the dinner table scene and just tried to see if there were some good angles, because I remember it being really well done and just them in that happy, warm home talking about her sleeping with her ex, you know, that funny scene where all her girlfriends are like, you bad girl, you crazy girl. And she gets to be the other woman now that, you know, Lake Bell stole Alec Baldwin away. So anyway, I looked at IMDb. I also just put on Curbed because there's a concert scene and the like two Curbs, the episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm, there was like a concert scene where him and Jeff went. So I pulled that up and actually took photos from my laptop or my screen and like took the concert photos from that. So I'm always just like watching TV and film and other ads and just like pulling stuff from all over, really. I didn't end up using the Curb stuff, but it was interesting just to see how many people, how many extras were in the concert scene, like what venue they went to, like what was happening around them. And if you watch things with the sound off, you learn a lot about how to shoot things.
Math production. Yeah. And it's crazy how sometimes you show people your final treatment and there's like 19 great images and they don't realize that you've pulled 300 other ones, like from all these, like that you literally do just need to know shows and movies and commercials and Instagram and art. And it's like, you can't do a good job on a deck if you don't familiarize yourself with imagery that's out on the internet, you know?
I have found, and I don't know if we've talked about this at all, I found myself revisiting a handful of specific touch points over the years. And I've since kind of been like, okay, this is just my cheat sheet binder. If I'm in a bind and I just need to get this thing out, it's 2 a.m. and it's, you know, they need it the following morning or whatever. Here's my just like, okay, I've got plenty of Coen Brothers. I've got like plenty of like Judd Apatow movie, like just like the easy, like Matt and Lo aesthetics that I can just kind of like yoink from.
Yeah. For the casting page, you just get it's like, from like Knocked Up, you know, it's
right,
all of
right,
them sitting on the couch.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. I do try to put at least, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 images from my spots in the treatment. And
oh, your previous spots.
Oh, I like that. Tell us more. How do you do that?
I just find some piece that would work for one page. Sometimes it's just one makes it in there. And sometimes, like I remember, I think was it a State Farm? I forget. There was some pitch that had like 6 photos in it.
You're like, this kid is having breakfast. Maybe Frosted Flakes. Here's Tony the Tiger.
It's funny. It's funny how some, the work kind of just continues. We need a young sort of beautiful girl doing this, and it's like, oh, I have something similar to that. Let me pull that up. But someone just told me actually that I had dinner with, they said, you should flag that. You should tell them what's yours. I think that's really powerful. And I've never put in the corner like mine and then images I pulled.
I just put a picture of me with the actors. Like, look,
Orin's joking, but I've seen his treatments.
But I
there.
Do have. Well, so I did this spot with Tim Meadows years ago, and I got a shot of him. Like, his character holds a business card in the shot, and it's just me and him. It's a pretty nice backlit shot. We shot like on the Universal lot, and he's just holding this business card in this way where anything I pitch on, I can just remove the business card and put whatever their product is. So if I do a credit card, it's easy, but I've done like motor oil or whatever. I'm like, it's so crazy. And I always write like, so crazy. I ran into Tim Meadows and he was holding Castor motor oil or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I do that.
It's a good bet. But I think both of these anecdotes, I think, point to, you know, there's a way to just kind of highlight your work in a way that they haven't seen before, which is really special. Because the opposite, I think, has probably happened to all of us as well, where maybe you're the incumbent bid or the challenger, I should say, and like somebody you're pitching against the director who's like, you know, done the previous 10 years of that campaign or whatever. And you guarantee like some of the best shots that you can find are from that campaign that director shot. So you can't be
Which
using
I've done many times.
Many times. That's what I'm saying. We've all been there where it's like, shoot, I can't.
Well,
believe
I don't
I
realize
that
I'm doing it. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. And then, you know, someone, the creative director on the line is like, yeah, actually, that's from Jordan's campaign. That's really great. We love that stuff.
I'm pitching on something right now that the brand, their new guidelines, I don't know if they're that new. I don't know how they feel like new guidelines, but they blind, you have to submit a blind treatment. So they don't have a name on it. And they will read them and not know whose pitches. Have you heard about this? Have you done that?
Well, but no, then do you present them on like a Zoom call or anything?
No, the client, the agency strips away all the personal information and it's just them. They look at the words and the voice and the visuals, obviously, and you know whether that person got it or not, but they don't know who you are or what your name is, if you were the incumbent or you're the newcomer or you're the, you know,
Wait, but
you're,
does the agency know?
Yes.
Does the client doesn't know?
The client
okay, but doesn't the
know.
Agency have a recommendation?
Have a reco, yeah.
Well, that's what's interesting about this. I think with the blind, I think what they're trying to do, what I can, I'm guessing here, but I really think it has to do with diversity and making sure there's more opportunities because there's just an unconscious bias when you know. You know, they've done this with their, I've taken unconscious bias training and like they do that with resumes. They pull the name off of them. Or sometimes they switch the names and then it's funny, it's interesting or not funny, it's kind of sad, but how many people hire people with that name when actually the resumes were switched. And so just because the name was different or whatever. So I think it probably has to do with unconscious bias now that I think about it. I just hadn't heard that before.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard that we have to have two versions, one that's has your bio and is for the agency. And then we need a stripped back version that is, you know, a blind read.
Yeah. I actually never put my bio in a treatment. But I know
I always
do.
Always.
Yeah, always.
Yeah, always. Especially if there's a creative director who you didn't get to meet on one of the calls or something, like they couldn't join and they're like, oh, wait, I want to know more about this. Like, I didn't get to meet them.
That's a free page.
Yeah, that's I don't like to waste pages. I'm like, we're on page 52 now. I'm going to say Oren Kaplan, ex-rollerblader.
Sure, that's
no
right.
No one makes second it to Israel. The end. It's like a nice to have. It's like no one's actually going to go there, but if they need to go there, then you have it and they can, you know. Sometimes I put my Bitmoji on it, so like my Bitmoji version of me.
That's a good move.
And my Bitmoji is so handsome. Awesome.
I do resent it when people, or rather the other way around, I'm impressed when their Bitmoji legitimately looks like them, because it's hard, you know. Anyway,
well, for listeners, if you go to RileyJeanEpson.com right now and check out her It's Me Introducing Avatars 2.0 spot,
it's me.
You'll see, It's Me Meet Friends as Your Avatar spot.
Yeah,
you'll see a bunch of avatars that look a lot like the people.
I love that company is amazing. Such a fun product.
That's cool. So I know we have to wrap up soon. I just want to ask you a couple more questions about your website, actually, if that's okay. So Tony the Tiger, so you did these Kellogg's Frosted Flakes spots with Tony the Tiger. Can you just tell us just real quick how you shoot those when you obviously don't have a cartoon tiger there, but he's like spinning a basketball on his finger? What's real? What's not real?
Oh my God.
Walk through that a little bit.
Totally. That was a very special job to get. I mean, he's my hero. So I feel like to be able to work with him and recreate.
He hasn't aged a day, you know? I don't know what his fur regimen is, but.
Yeah. He definitely rolls his face and uses eye patches and all the type of things that you can do these days to keep your skin young. But yeah, I mean, so live motion capture, you know, working with The Mill, the iconic The Mill guys. And girls, and
what do you mean live motion capture? You have a person that's standing in for Tony.
You have a person who is Tony, so it's his voice, it's his mannerisms. He has been Tony for a few years now.
The official Tony actor
comes to location. It's hilarious because his voice is so booming, and so you just even if he was on the side of the road and he was like, hello, like you'd be like, wait, is that Tony the Tiger? Like you turn and kind of go, oh my God.
Yeah, you're like, where?
He's like, where should I turn? It's right.
Right. Yeah, totally.
I did see a car today where the vanity license plate was great abs.
Oh, that was mine.
He wears a suit, and there's obviously data points on the
markers.
And it's a tight suit, and it's not super comfortable. I remember asking him if he needed to use the restroom more often, and definitely needed to take like breaks and to take that thing on and off, and to set all the sensors and stuff. Definitely interesting. But
Is there an eye line on the suit, like something that goes above his head? Because Tony's
pretty
tall. Exactly.
Yeah,
he's tall, right?
He's tall, but this actor's actually quite tall as well. But yeah, he is a bit taller. There's totally an eye line for the actors, because the people, the humans that are interacting with him need an eye line for Tony's eyes. Because if you look at the actor's eyes, you'd actually be looking at his chest. So I had to really be mindful about, you know, blocking and placement and things like that. And it was a dream come true, because it was so cool to sit at the monitor, and actually they can send a feed of Tony to the monitor. So you get a rough.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
A mock-up of it. Yeah, I have some video of it on my phone, and it was really special just to be able to kind of, is this real life? Like, is Tony really on the screen? And it's a little glitchy. Obviously, it's not, there isn't motion blur, and he's not as shiny, and it's certainly not perfect, but it's such, I mean, I'm like, are we shooting an Avatar movie right now? What's going on here, guys? Like, how do we get to see this already? So, yeah, so dealing with space and objects is certainly tricky. I had to immerse myself in, you know, in the team who does this all the time, and really understand what can he touch, you know, but people really can. You can do an over the shoulder, a dirty over the shoulder, and, you know, you can definitely like have their hair be, you know, sort of on there, just sitting there. You don't have to like clear it and make sure there's no hair in front of him.
There's no green screen or anything.
Yeah. So it does feel a little freeing.
That's awesome.
Freeing in that way, where you get to kind of not be as fragile with sort of every VFX shot has to be so perfect. And I did a ton of VFX when I was at Snap, from doing all the phone shots and the AR
filters and yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, we did so much. Zooming in and out of the phone was kind of a fun thing that I feel like we kind of coined, and now a lot of people are doing it. But yeah, I think doing a lot of VFX then just led to, I love to do VFX now. I mean, I look for those jobs. I love to do mobile replacements and just try to, especially now with all the mobile apps, it's like you can zoom in, zoom out. Look at the It's Me video, right? I mean, that was just a couple months ago. So,
yeah. And is the one spot with Sky Cats, I'm actually selfishly asking this question, but he's spinning a basketball the entire time. Was he really spinning it, or is that CG, that basketball?
That's a great question. We did it both ways. So we had him spin an actual basketball, and then I remember, if I'm remembering it correctly, I think we killed the basketball and just had him do this, the actor do this, and we added it after. It just doesn't have the same, it's not as control. We need to be able to control it. So I think there was an idea to have it be real, and then it is actually completely fake. I think what is where we landed, but.
My friends were just asking me, they wanted to do a shot where the camera's like coming out from a person and he's like spinning the ball for the whole commercial. And I was like, maybe we can just put it on like a pole and spin it and just remove the pole.
Oh. You know?
Or we could do a CG version, but it's like the real thing is nice. So.
Well,
is
yeah, nice. I think the difference being like if your character is CG, then it's a heck of a lot harder to, even though it's obviously a real person that you're matching the moves to, I imagine like it creates a level of complication. Whereas if it was a real actor, then maybe scrubbing whatever rig you had makes it a little bit easier.
Yeah, and the lighting and all that stuff.
The things that Tony picks up and touches, and he actually, he throws a ball too. I think he even throws one at the, Sky does that. But yeah, I think the stuff he touches needs to be Tonyized. Tony, it has to be the, you know, beautiful.
It's a Tonyized, actually.
Tonyized. And so,
you know that my wife teaches Tony guy Pilates?
No, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But yeah, having the extras walk behind him, one more thing about Tony, having the extras walk behind him was really cool. Because I added a funny wave. Like I said, like do an, I told Tony, I was like, do it over, like over the top wave to like a sound guy on the stage. Cause he's in the back lot of America's Funniest Home Videos. And he does like, hey! Like he knows somebody. And then the guy's like, hey.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so my last question, so you have a website, and I'm in website rejuvenation mode right now. So I'm very, it's top of mind. Your first three spots on your website are all Dr. Pepper Oscar spots with Eliza Schlesinger. Do you want people, when they go to your website, to watch all three of those? Is that like if you had your dream version of how somebody goes to your website? I guess I'm just curious why you didn't pick like your favorite one of those and you put like all three of them at the top.
Yeah, it's dinner, drinks, and dessert is the three. And I think one of them, they're kind of nice as a trio because it's three different outfits, three different stories, three different moments. It's her making sort of dinner, which is nachos, having dessert, and then having kind of hanging out, having a drink. And so I think just the three, it was kind of a nice, I don't know, the power of three, right? It's kind of cool. And I felt like it was nice to keep them together. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I really want to do more comedy. I want to work with more female comedians. I think maybe it's also just a subliminal putting that work out there. I'm just so excited to be a female in comedy and be in commercials, specifically a female director. I think in comedy is so important right now. And just to be in that space, it's been really fun.
And it doesn't have anything to do with like, I feel like with my site, I'm always like, oh, well, I'll put like the newest thing up or something like that. Do you know what I mean? I'm always like, well, I've got to keep it fresh. And most of the time that doesn't have anything to do with what people think. But does that run through your mind at all?
Yeah, the newest stuff at the top for sure. That was 2021. So that was this year. It was the Oscars this year. And that definitely runs through my mind of what to keep at the top and what order to put it in. But I'm more concerned with the production company's order of things, like what spots did they choose. It's so interesting too, like talking to the EPs and the sales reps, like what work they want to put up and then what work that they'll keep for specific reels and customized reels and stuff. So that's been interesting too, just to hear them. Here's what I think about it. I think my website is kind of a bit of a library. It's not as curated, whereas their website is like very curated. You know what I mean? So I feel like the way I treat my website is kind of just throw it all up there.
And broader
maybe
reference points.
I should be more curated, but I feel like it's kind of check it all out, peruse, tootle around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I think Orin and I are both approaching our websites with like perhaps a new mentality that perhaps we'll talk about some other time, a different episode. But it's great to get your philosophy on both of them, right? Because if you know your EPs are doing a great job of tailoring exactly what spots and in what order, you know, people are seeing for a specific job, then maybe it is okay that it's a bit of a smorgasbord for your website. I don't know. I haven't figured it out one way or the other.
Yeah. On Tool, on their website, they have one of the Dr. Pepper spots.
Yeah.
One Snapchat, one Zillow, and one Clorox.
Well, there you go. Well, that was there. They curated it. I made it myself on Wix, which is nice because I don't have to rely on, it's so weird when my friends have to rely on, you know, website person to, oh, I got to make a change. I got to call my website guy. I feel like that's so 90s.
Yeah, truly.
We're Squarespacers over here.
Yeah, cool. Love that. Do it yourself. Sure.
No doubt.
Cool. Well, awesome. I'm wondering what's next for you.
Yeah, what's the future hold for Riley?
Hopefully big time Marvel movies. I want to do some couple $100 million movies one day. That would be a dream. I feel like I know how to work really well under pressure of like corporate creative. And it just excites me to be able to tell. I feel like with movies like Free Guy and what Taika's doing with Marvel, I feel like, you know, and what Mandalorian's kind of had some comedic beats. Like I think it would be, it's just really, it's inspiring to me to bring comedy into action films and films that are, and I say action films because those are the films that usually get the huge budgets, the big rollouts, like they're the big blockbusters. And so I would love to find myself there one day and, you know, just talk about that 10-year plan with my manager. We're just going to manifest it, okay?
You know what, Riley? You reminded me of my one final question, actually. The Forbes 30 Under 30. Does that come through PR?
Yeah. So, well, I was submitted by multiple people. So one was my PR person. Another person was a friend, colleague. So a few different people had submitted. And then they do a follow-up and they ask for references, like, I didn't realize that they asked for financials. Like it's really,
it is.
I actually texted my friend who had been on it the year before. And I was like, can I call you? Like, I feel like it's really uncomfortable. Did you have to do this? Like, did they ask you about money and financial questions? And I was like, oh my God. Like, this
did a Nigerian prince just call me?
Yeah. So I was really kind of,
Is Dirty John's
secure?
30 under 30.
Like, tell them my, like, rate and what I needed that year or whatever. So it was interesting to share that information with an entity. But obviously it was all for the you just get any type of question from a stranger like that. You're just like, wait, I'll just double check. There's so much spam these days. You're like, should I tell these people this information? Even though it's freaking Forbes. Like, tell them whatever they want. Give them your social security number, you know, like tell them what they need to know.
Yeah.
But no, PR is really helpful. PR is everything, but you have to use it wisely. And I would say only turning it on when you're ready to turn it on. Like, I think that's really important. It's best to have a project that they can actually take out into the world.
Sure.
I think that's the key.
Yeah. Otherwise you're just, you're fishing without bait, right? Well, Riley, this has been so awesome. Do you have a second to hang out and endorse with us?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, for sure.
Unpaid endorsements.
So this is actually, I think, maybe even a re-endorsement of, I think, Gino, one of our earliest guests, well before episode 100. He'll do one of a thing where, like, he'll take a second of video every single day and cut that into a cool end of the year montage thing. And there's an app called 1 Second Every Day, 1SE, that I used, you know, a little. It's one of those things where you download it, you give it a shot. It's kind of cool. And you sort of lose track of it. And, you know, you've got 15 seconds of a cool video or whatever. So anyway, my daughter was born not that long ago. And I was like, oh, it would be kind of cool to go ahead and, like, start this back up again and re-downloaded the app. And they've made a ton of awesome new improvements that make it way, way easier and more feasible to actually keep up with the act of documenting a single second of each one of your days. Like, you can pull from your back catalog and it'll kind of tell you, like, oh, these are the different videos that you took on that day. So, like, the likelihood that you took either a live photo or a little bit of video, or even it'll let you do a still kind of in those order, in that order of higher of importance, the likelihood that you have one of those things is probably pretty high, the way that we all live our lives at this point. And yeah, so
for me, it's just all pictures of, like, prices at Home Depot. Should I get this toilet or this toilet?
Oh, but there's something really charming about that, honestly. Like, that's better in a certain sense than, like, a cool selfie on set. You know, it's like, those are cool too, but, like, the mundanity of it, I think, is really what makes those videos special and strange and unique. So so I'm re-endorsing 1SE.
Riley, you got anything?
I have an app called Teleprompter by BigVu, B-I-G-V-U. It doesn't have a lovely name, but it is a great product because what it is it's a teleprompter for your phone, for your smartphone. And I have to work with actors sometimes to grab social content and do some direct-to-camera stuff. But so we shoot the PVC spot. We get it on our Aris or our Sonys or our Reds, and then we need to get some additional scripts that maybe are to camera and they're shot on a phone, a smartphone, an iPhone, because it'll feel more integrated to the social platforms that the ad is going to run on. And it feels more like, oh, I'm not being served an ad. It kind of feels like it belongs in the series of someone's stories, especially.
This is Gal Gadot just singing Imagine about
Clorox. Yeah, for no reason. Exactly.
Best investment I ever made.
So yeah. If you type in, it's so easy. You just type in your script and then you hand it to the actor and they can, it doesn't look like they're reading a teleprompter at all, but it just
shows up. So they're record. You can record while you're reading
selfie
the teleprompter
mode. Phone mode,
and it's
rather than using the notes app or just making them memorize it or whatever.
That's pretty. I'm gonna check that out. That's very smart.
Check it out.
Cool. I keep forgetting the lyrics to Happy Birthday when I'm sending Happy Birthday videos to people, but now I can use that and it'll be perfect.
Don't sing it, Oren. We can't afford to get sued.
Oh yes.
Kaplan, what you got, buddy?
My endorsement, it's a weird one, but I watch a lot of bad TV because I have a 5-year-old daughter. And my endorsement is, when you're building a set on a stage, just because you can build a big set doesn't mean you should build a big set. Some of these kid shows, they have, like, a bedroom and it's like 20 feet by 30 feet and it just looks so empty and there's no foreground stuff. And in my day when I was working at Disney, we built some sets that were like, let's make them huge, this huge dorm room. And it just feels so not cozy. And a couple of years ago, I did a shoot where we're rebuilding, like, someone's room in a house. And the DP was like, let's make it really big. So we have all the room in the world we want, put lights and everything. And we got the set and we just squeezed everything in. We just used half the set. So,
which I think honestly is maybe the actual best compromise, because then you have the room if you need it.
Yeah, but if you're on a stage,
I always build my
shoot
sets too small, and then the DP's like, "Really, dude?"
Yeah, but if you're on a set on a stage, you can just put the lights behind the walls.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think resist the urge to use the space. Like, remember, Jordan Brady always says this. Like, all that matters is, like, what the camera sees, and nothing else. And if you know, when you put things close to each other, it's just much easier to get foreground in on, like, a close-up shot, you know, on, like, if you want to do, like, a 35 millimeter, like, medium shot of someone and you want like a plant in the foreground or something, it won't make sense if your room is giant that there's a plant in the middle of the room, you know?
And you can sense that, you feel it even from a lighting perspective, I feel like, unless you're like,
yeah, and rooms start feeling real fake when they get so big, you know, especially with
for flat sure. Walls, so. You're reminding me of all the, I just did the one of the programs, the workshops at the DGA. We had to get all the floor plans for the episode that we actually got to work with actors this weekend, and we got critiqued live as we did an episode of NCIS of television. And it was crazy to have to really look at, we weren't on the sets, obviously. We only had the schematics, and it was very stressful trying to block a scene with actors and never see the space. And actually, they made us come up with a shot list, because that's often what you have to do. You've never scouted the location, but you have to come up with a shot list just based on the overhead schematics. And so just what you're saying about like moving things, what can you move? Can you create more interesting shots? What's your opener? What's your closing shot? You know, but having never seen the space, so just with this overhead blueprint. And it was it was very difficult, but it was so good to exercise that part of your brain of like, wait, okay, this is here and this is there. And how do you, what the camera sees is the only thing that's important, you know?
Yeah. And that's why, like when people go to Saturday Night Live or the Tonight Show or whatever, or even like a real set, like on a lot, people are like, oh, they're so much smaller than I thought, you know, because they build them in a way to feel full and cozy and not
sterile. Well, with SNL, they just don't have any room.
Yeah.
I feel like they'd kick it out a little bit more if they could.
Yeah. Part of it is the fun of the people working on top of each other. Yeah, there's an energy you get from that.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, but
cool. Well, if people want to follow you, Riley, what's your, what's, where do they go? Instagram?
Yeah. Snapchat? My Instagram is direct. Yeah, sure. No, Instagram is Director Riley. My name is called
R-Y-L-E-E.
So it's Director Riley. And yeah, my website and yeah, Instagram, IG.
Awesome. Well, if you want to learn about the other things that we talked about, you can follow us at Just Shoot a Pod across all social media. Hit us up. Ask us any questions. We'll forward them along to Riley. And you can, if you have a longer question, just drop us an email at justshootapod@gmail.com. You can follow me across all social media as well, at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. I'm at Smitey Pileg on Twitter. You can also go to our website, justshootapod.com, if you want to see what we talked about. This episode was edited by Sarah Weirda. The music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And there's additional ad music from jambox.io. So thanks, everyone, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.